Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atta Vishatsva Bhavanam Sarva Kamam Anuttamam Prasada Yatra Patninam Sahasrani Chashodasha Atta Vishatsva Bhavanam Sarva Kamam Anuttamam Prasada Yatra Patninam Sahasrani Chashodasha. Atta thereafter Avishat entered Swabhavanam, personal palaces, Sarva, all, Kamam, desires, Anuttamam, perfect to the fullest extent, Prasada, palaces, Yatra, where? Patninam. Of the wives numbering. Sahasrani. Thousands. Cha. Over and above. Shodasha. 16. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, the Lord entered his palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. Purport. Lord Krishna had 16,108 wives, and for each and every one of them, there was a fully equipped palace, complete with necessary compounds and gardens. Full description of these palaces is given in the 10th canto. All the palaces were made of the best marble stone. They were illuminated by jewels and decorated by curtains and carpets of velvet and silk, nicely bedecked and embroidered with gold lace. The personality of Godhead means one who is full with all power, all energy, all opulences, all beauties, all knowledge and all renunciation. Therefore, in the palaces of the Lord, there was nothing wanting for fulfilling all desires of the Lord. The Lord is unlimited, and therefore his desires are also unlimited, and the supply is also unlimited. Everything being unlimited, it is concisely described here as Sarva Kamam, or full with all desirable equipment. Devotees tend to think that they should live poorly, that poverty is their very important principle. Well, in a way it is, but it's not actually discussed as one of the major principles of Krishna consciousness. Wherein the nectar of devotion does Rupa Goswami stress that a devotee should live poorly, that he has to live, you know, in a mud hut with no proper facilities? Where is that said? It's not just that Prabhupada was pampering Westerners who were used to luxury and therefore didn't ask them to be austere. We have to understand the principle of austerity that Rupa Goswami taught. He teaches about austerity, but he defines it in a special way in connection with Krishna consciousness. First of all, Krishna is the supreme householder. He's got the richest houses, and not just one or a few of them, but in Dwarka, he's got all the houses in the world, but in Dwarka, he's got the palaces of his 16,000 queens. You may say, well, those are the queen's palaces. You know, he built them because they needed them. But they're his queens. Krishna's not a henpecked husband like others who simply has to work like a dog to satisfy the demands of the wife and children. Krishna, whatever he does, is arranged for his enjoyment. Sarva kamam. Materialists try to arrange a living facility that is sarva kama. All comforts, all desires are fulfilled in your home. A man gets married to have facility for sex. And then he wants someone to clean his house and feed him and do his laundry. So, and then he may have aspiration to have descendants, to have children to carry on the business. So he gets married and has a house. And so he has his various desires. He has his physical desires, his business aspirations, his aspirations to fulfill the desires of his parents and his obligations to the forefathers to have children. And he wants a comfortable place to live. And he has maybe other particular desires. Maybe he likes to drive fast cars and he wants a nice car. And it costs a lot of money to get a nice car. Or he wants, you know, high-definition, big-screen television set. Or whatever. He needs a home. Living in a grass hut is not the proper facility for, even if you have money, for collecting fancy toys. You need a strong house to protect your possessions, to keep thieves out. So anyway, materialists want facility for living that provides the fulfillment of their desires. This is unnatural, but it is a reflection of the original natural situation, that there is a Supreme Lord, and he has his abode, in which all of his desires are fulfilled. That's the natural condition. Now, what are the devotees supposed to do? They should not want anything for themselves. If Krishna so desires it and so arranges it, they can live with nothing. At least if they're strong devotees. They can live under a tree, not know where the food is going to come for each meal. If Krishna so desires and so arranges. But actually, the principle of renunciation for devotees is not to swear by poverty and to refuse to accept what Krishna sends you as, in the way of facilities. In the name of renunciation, Krishna wants you to utilize things in his service, including a home and other material facilities. A devotee who's mature will be ready to accept them. Otherwise, he's like an impersonalist. Prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastunaha mumukshubi parityago vairagyam apaglu vairagyam uchyate. The impersonalists and others who have this inferior conception of renunciation, they look at things that are actually meant to be utilized for the pleasure and glorification of Krishna, and they judge them to be material, inferior. Prapanchakata. just mundane. I will not touch it. I will avoid it, and this will be my vow of poverty. But that's inferior renunciation if it's something meant to be used in Krishna's service. The devotees who are mature, who understand the higher principles of Krishna consciousness, they practice yukta vairagyam. They use everything that's given to them for their own individual specific service. They accept what is required facility for carrying out that service, even if it is a home and family. If Krishna arranges that, then the devotee accepts it. If it's favorable for his service. Serious devotees try to practice prapatti, sharanagati, devoting themselves fully to Krishna. But palaka vairagya, impersonal renunciation, is not the way to take full shelter of Krishna. You're taking shelter of your poverty and your pride in your poverty. We are meant to take full shelter of Krishna instead. Anukulyasya sankalpaha pratikulyasya varjanam. These are the first two elements of sharanagati, which is the same as what the Sri Vaishnavas call prapatti. Simply taking shelter of Krishna and becoming fully dependent on him. First step, accept whatever is favorable to your service. Second, avoid or reject, abandon what is unfavorable to your service. That includes accepting facilities. If it's favorable for our service, unfavorable, we're all born into our own karma. Everybody has something. Nobody, I don't see anybody here without clothes on their back. Everybody's got some clothes. Nobody's starving to death. Even before you came to devotional service, Krishna fed you. You had a place to live. You maybe had a job or some occupation. Or you went to school. Krishna had made so many arrangements for you even before you decided to become his devotee. So we already have facilities that are the results of our past activities. It's our karma. Different people have different karma, but we all have some facilities in life. So pratikulyasya varjanam means among the things that we do have, maybe some of them, we have to look and judge at each particular stage of our development. What's appropriate in an early stage of one's devotional advancement may become inappropriate later on, and vice versa. So we have to constantly reevaluate, or at least every twice a year or so on, reevaluate our material situation. Are the things that I'm accepting in my life as facilities, are they conducive to my making more advancement in Krishna consciousness than where I am right now? Or are they holding me back or degrading me? And then we maybe get opportunities as byproducts of our devotional service. We get rewards. We get opportunities for more facility. As we accept more responsibility in devotional service, it's natural that we get opportunities for more facility. So we have to judge the things we have, whether some of them we should give up because they're obstructing our advancement. And then when we get opportunity to get new facilities, we have to look at them carefully before accepting. Will this be conducive to my service? Do I need someone servicing me in this way? Should I accept such and such service from somebody else? Will it help me do more service, or will it drag me down to accept opulence and luxury that I don't need? So we have to be on the lookout to make sure that we practice these two principles. Not refusing to accept what's suitable for our service, but rejecting anything that we have or we may have an opportunity to get that might be harmful to our progress. Harmful by making us proud, by making us lazy in the lap of comfort, by making us distracted. So we have to be careful, because our goal should be to enter Krishna, to join Krishna in his abode. Mam eti konteya. Perfection for us is not just liberation, not just getting out of the material world, but getting out of the material world so we can transfer ourselves to Krishna's world, to be with him in his abode. We can transcend even that and be willing to stay forever in this world to serve him. But that is very transcendental. But it's also acceptable and spiritual to want to join Krishna in his abode, if he's willing, and if that's what he wants. If he wants us back there, then we simply satisfy his desire and go back to him in his spiritual abode. If Krishna, we find out, wants us to stay in the material world and serve him here, then we should fulfill that desire. That's mature devotional service, to find out what Krishna wants and be ready to try to fulfill that desire, whether it's stay in this world or go back to Godhead. But going back to Godhead, if Krishna wills it, is a bona fide destination, a bona fide ambition. Or more generally, no matter where we're situated, material or spiritual world, we want to be connected with Krishna. Lord Nityananda, singing in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, advises, Krishna samsara koro chadi anachar. Very simple formula. Of course, that phrase can be interpreted, samsara. Samsara means material existence, the cycle of birth and death. But in modern Bengali and Hindi, it means family life. So let's take it that way. It's a modern song written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Krishna samsara koro. You should cultivate your family life as a member of Krishna's family. Chadi anachar. But be careful to give up and avoid deviant activity that is against the devotional principles. Krishna samsara koro chadi anachar. Jai shini mainitai. This, if a young man is wondering whether he should remain brahmachari or get married, this is the principle to judge by. We want to be family men. We want to be members of Krishna's family. Will my living in a house with a wife help me make advancement toward that goal of becoming functional as a member of Krishna's family? Or will it stand in the way? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted hundreds of men and women as his intimate associates, his personal associates. And many of them were grihasthas, and some of them were sannyasis or avadutas. He accepted both. The devotion, dedication to Krishna's service is what mattered. We have the ideal example of grihastha in Srivas Thakur. He lived in a big extended family. He lived with his three brothers and their families and their servants, the whole big household. We have the renovated replica of Shiva's Angan. Don't think that's the original walls and pillars. They built those pillars 10 years ago. I saw them building them. Yeah. And it must have been a much bigger house than that originally for the families of four brothers with all their servants to be living there. Big household. Not an easy thing to maintain such a household. Shiva's Thakur was the head of the household. So Lord Chaitanya would visit him. Of course, he would come every night for Sankirtan for that year, the initiation of the Sankirtan movement. But even outside of that, Lord Chaitanya had very friendly relationship with Srinivas Thakur and would visit his house very often. So intimate of a relationship that Srinivas Thakur is on the altar as part of the Panchatattva. He's on the level of God, worshipped. Jiva, but he's worshipped as one of the Panchatattva. Because of the intimate relationship he and his wife had with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. So once Lord Chaitanya visited him, this is recorded in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, and asked Srinivas Thakur, "How do you do it? I never see you doing anything to earn money. You don't do any work. I never see you working. I never see you earning money. How do you maintain this whole big household?" So Srinivas Thakur answered inimically, in a puzzling way. He just clapped his hands three times. And Lord Chaitanya was wondering, "What do you mean by that?" Srinivas Thakur gave the interpretation, explanation, that I just trust Krishna. If no food comes in the house for 3 days, that was represented by the three claps, then I'll just jump in the Ganga and drown myself. I'm just depending on Krishna. So, can you imitate that? That's an ideal standard for a householder. To totally depend on Krishna. And just work for Krishna. Do your brahminical work. Do your preaching work. And even as a grahasta, everything will be maintained. One who's fully dedicated to Prabhupada's mission shouldn't have to think about making money. Even to maintain a family. Krishna can easily maintain. He does it for everybody in the spiritual world. There's so many. Everybody in Vaikuntha is married. And I don't see, I don't see a problem that, they have to go to the factory in the office to earn money to maintain their families. Lord Narayan and his energies provide everything for everybody. They don't need to go to a shopping center and use their credit cards to purchase their necessities. They just go to the nearest desire tree or cow and just take what they need. Everything is provided freely. So for devotees that are totally dedicated to Prabhupada's mission, this world can be Vaikuntha. You don't have to. I just got into talking about this. Most of you here are not married, but you may get married someday. You don't need to worry about making money. And not just because, we got a rich friend here who's supporting us. Because Krishna is supporting us. If we're fully trusting him and we function as proper brahmanas, we shouldn't need to descend to this Vaishya mentality of where is money, where is money. Money will, Krishna can give you all the money you need. If you're dedicated to preaching, then everything you need is provided. We see the strange phenomenon, but it's just the reality. The grihasthas are struggling to make ends meet, to pay the rent, and the sannyasis are living nicer than the grihasthas, not paying any attention to making money. Now that's not just because sannyasa is a racket or something, you know, it's just, that's not unfair. They have dedicated their lives. They could have been grihasthas. They could have been working too to make a lot of money. But they decided to try to fully trust Krishna. And it works. Even if you're not a grihastha, it can work. If you're trusting Krishna enough. Sarvakama. Krishna has no problem fulfilling all needs and desires. If we're more interested in fulfilling his needs and desires, then we don't have to worry about fulfilling our own. Krishna lives in a palace? Sometimes. In Dwarka, in Vaikuntha, he's living in palaces. But sometimes he likes to live more simply. You could argue that the so-called simple houses in Vraja, even Gokula, are really more like palaces. You could argue like that. That there's, you know, actually there's more opulence in Gokula than there is in Vaikuntha. Although it's covered by the sweetness, it's eclipsed, but it's there. Okay, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his pastimes lived in very simple conditions. The Brahmins in Navadvip, they didn't live in marble palaces. They didn't drive their cars to the Ganga for their baths, you know, or their motorcycles. They walked. Even if they had to go to the other side of India, they walked. They lived very simply. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a sannyasi especially, was extremely simple. He wouldn't accept a nice mattress to sleep on because as a sannyasi he thought that it would look bad. Some of his devotees were trying to give him facilities and comforts and he would refuse them. Jagadananda Pandit made a big container of nice sandalwood oil. It's hard work to just grind sandalwood paste. What to speak of distilling oil from it? Or maybe he just bought, I think he made it himself personally. He didn't just go to the market and buy sandalwood oil. He made it himself with great trouble for the pleasure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I can't take this. I can't accept a gift like this. People will think I'm one of these dari sannyasis who wear saffron, but actually are keeping widows on the side and enjoying life. So what are you giving me this fancy oil? I can't take it. Jagannatha the Pandit took that pot of oil, and in anger he went to the upper floor of his house and threw it on the ground and broke it. A lot of money's worth of oil. He just threw it away because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't accept his gift. And he started fasting. He didn't eat for 3 days. Finally, Lord Chaitanya apologized to him and begged him to take a meal, eat something, don't starve to death. And Jagannath Panda, on the fourth day, he ate something on the request of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wanted to give comfort to the Lord, and in his role as a sannyasi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused that comfort. But it's not that Krishna, in his pastimes, refused comforts. A different mood. So if we're going to be joining Krishna's pastimes, or serving those pastimes, even from a distance, we have to follow Krishna's moods. When he says it's time for renunciation, for poverty, for austerity, then we have to accept it. And when he says it's time to live in a palace, then we have to, if we want to be with him, we have to accept that. Devotees living in a temple, sometimes the temple is like a palace. But they're the servants of Krishna in the temple. How do you show that? How do you demonstrate that you understand you're the servant? Living in Krishna's palace. And not give Krishna any wrong ideas that you think that you own the place. Show up at Mangalarti with the other servants. to greet the master in the morning. That you're showing Krishna that you understand that this palace is his, not yours. So, anyway, Krishna's here entering his palace, says, those who live with Krishna in his abode enjoy all facilities with Krishna. Yoshnute satyam gyanam anantam brahma. The absolute truth is defined by the Taittiriya Upanishad as eternal reality, fully conscious and blissful, unlimitedly. Ya etad veda, one who understands this absolute truth. Nihitam guhayam, who is hiding in the heart. Soshrute sarva kahaman brahmana vipashtita. He will enjoy all facilities, all the fulfillment of all desires, all luxurious things, in the company of that Supreme Absolute Truth, who is living in his abode, sarva kamam, where all facilities are provided him, but he likes to share those facilities with his associates and servants. So we should just want to become Krishna's servants. And whatever we need, whatever we want, will be provided. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes?
Krishna, Haribol, Haribol. Thank you for your class, Prabhuji. I have a question. For example, when we get opportunity to acquire some material things, immediately mind draws picture how we gonna use them in Krishna service, but it's only on the mental platform. Actually, they might be very harmful for our devotional service. So what should be our basis to accept or not accept those facilities?
We should not worry about our own condition. If we're thinking about our own purification as more important than Krishna's pleasure, then we're not going to get purified very quickly. Then we're attached to our purification. We should be more interested that Krishna is satisfied. So we should accept something even if it distracts our mind, if it's what Krishna wants.
Does it mean that Krishna might offer all these challenges that he gave us some material facilities and then he looks at us or how we are using them? And then he decides either to give us further or not to give.
You mean when he gives us some facility?
Yes, yes.
Why
yes.
does he give it to us? For?
Yeah. Is this like a test of Krishna?
Well, it's both. Krishna is just trying to be kind to his devotees, give them some comfort so their lives aren't miserable. Krishna is rewarding his devotee who wants to give some reward for the faithful service. And it's also a test. But the faithful servant will pass the test. So Dhamma Brahmana, when he saw, when he came home from Dwarka and he saw this palace that his house had turned into, his first reaction was, this is a test. I have to be very careful to show Krishna that I won't become puffed up by this opulence. So it's both. It's Krishna just wanting to be kind to his devotee. He's wanting to reciprocate and give some reward for the service. But it's also a test. If we fail the test, we can get into trouble. We accept these little opulences, these little luxuries and perks in the service of Krishna, which include money, power over other people, prestige. If we, in a gross materialistic way, improperly try to exploit these facilities, then we can fall down very easily.
Also, at the same time, we might try to get some, for example, some skills. Same Sanskrit might be an example that we can try to get this in order to serve Krishna, so-called. But at the same time, it might become our source of... fall down So also,
well, we shouldn't just decide for ourselves what service we should do for Krishna. Every service we have should be given to us by a higher authority. Right? So when the authority tells you, do this, then you should just do it. And try not to make a mess of it. Try not to make it a cause of your fall down to carry out your service. Now, you can. In carrying out your service, if you do it the wrong way, and you misuse everything, and become puffed up, you can fall down, even in trying to carry out your service. But we have to try to carry out our appointed service and not make a mess of it and fall down in the process. Okay. Yes, Prabhu? Madan Mohan.
You were mentioning that poverty is not one of angas of devotional service. And on the other hand, we can find some principles which may seem to be indicative of having to go that end. For instance, Rupa Goswami says, one of the angas, Boga Adi Tyagan Krishna Sihetave, that one has to give up.
Can we specify exactly? I didn't hear all the words. Let's analyze it, yeah.
Boga Adi Tyagan Krishna Sihetave.
Krishnasya
Hetave, for the sake of
Hetave,
yeah,
for Krishna's sake.
Or like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it also says that Lord Chaitanya, when he sees his devotees being very renounced, he becomes very pleased, because this is the main quality of devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that they are very renounced. But on the other hand, devotees do enjoy facilities which exceed the
facilities. But this tyaga and this vairagya has to be understood according to the principle of yukta vairagya. For Krishna's sake, what will increase your devotional service, you accept, and what will hinder it, you reject. And for Krishna's pleasure, we'll give up anything. Sometimes even including our attachment to poverty. That's also renunciation.
Or our attachment to renunciation, can we give it up?
Yeah.
For Krishna's pleasure? I guess this is...
Look at Priyavrata. Yeah. Krishna wanted him to become a Prajapati. And he had to give up his renunciation to do that.
Not mistaken, that pastime which you mentioned of Brahman Sudama, one of the acharyas says that there are two categories of devotees. One of Krishna. One category are those devotees who are averse to material opulence. Another category is those who are neutral or indifferent to it. To the second category, sometimes Krishna gives pleasure, material enjoyment, so they could preach better, but for those who are very fearful of it, Krishna never gives it to them to protect their right to...
Well, then he's giving them what they want. They don't want the opulence, so Krishna doesn't give it to them.
Right.
Okay. But are they equal, or are the ones that are indifferent better?
I don't know.
That's not said. Okay. Yes, bro.
I could have two questions. So the first one could be slightly in reference to Madan Mohan's question.
Yes.
I had read Prabhupada's godbrother Sridhar Swami, B.R. Sridhar, saying that he didn't want to accept the facilities and all that comes with being a world preacher. Is that false renunciation? Or?
Oh, I don't want to judge him. He's an advanced devotee, so it all depends on the individual devotee's relationship with Krishna. I don't know whether Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wanted Sridhar Maharaj to travel around the world and preach. I don't know. If Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't want him to, then he was perfectly fulfilling Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire by not doing it. He wanted somebody else to do that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I can't judge. You know, I don't know what Krishna wanted of him.
You spoke about yukta vairagya in reference to gross objects, but on the subtle level or philosophical level, could ideas concepts that are based on an atheistic outlook also be accepted in case Krishna consciousness? Or are they incompatible with Krishna consciousness?
They're pretty much incompatible. I mean, you can't dovetail everything. Can you dovetail illicit sex? You know, Krishna's service? I don't know. Yeah. I don't, maybe it's a rare case, but you know, so atheistic philosophy is just as bad as illicit sex. It's evil. You know, and I don't see how it can be dovetailed. I don't know, maybe you could do some, you know, fancy preaching Mahayana philosophy and then contracting it. I don't think we should try that. It's really dangerous. I don't think it's possible to dovetail atheistic philosophy. Yes? Second chapter of Gita. Atheistic. Yes. Like what? Here's the microphone, right behind you.
Well, it's 225, 26, all those verses. 27, I think. And even Prabhupada comments on Lokayataka, Vaibhashika philosophy. And.
But is it stuff. Really? I mean, this is basic. This is.
Nitya jatam nityam vamanya samratam.
Oh, I see. Hypothetically, even if you think the soul is.
Yeah, so kind of.
Temporary.
In that sense, like.
But if Krishna's not promoting it, he's just saying, even if you're going to be an atheist, you know, it's common sense to understand that even if you think the soul's going to die, that you're going to have to do your duty anyway, even if you're an atheist.
Yeah,
it's not promoting atheism.
I think the question is exactly because it's not for promotion of that philosophy,
oh, I see.
But for the purpose of inducing on some level.
We can use atheistic philosophy and Mayavad philosophy. J.D. Rambam said, Mayavad shunile hoi sharvanash. If you even hear the Mayavad philosophy, everything's ruined. But Vaishnavas do study Mayavad philosophy. There's Mayavad philosophy in the Sandarbhas, especially in the Sarvas and Vadani. There are passages from Shankaracharya. But Vaishnavas study the Mayavad philosophy in order to soundly defeat it. So that's a kind of use. You know, we use demons to fight them and destroy them. So we can use atheism as, you know, Prabhupada talked about a lot of atheism, but then he defeated it. You raise the Purvapaksha and knock it down. So, yes, we can use atheistic and Mayavad philosophy as our Purvapaksha, as the opponent's view that we're going to defeat. Or you can say that such and such principle is so universal that even the Mayavadis and the materialists agree to it. Even if you say the soul is temporary, still you have to do your duty. That's another way of proving your position to show that even your opponent has to agree with you. Even his principles are not contrary to it. If even Shankaracharya says what you want to prove, then that's great. Even our, you know, even the atheists and the Mayavadis agree with certain point that we're trying to prove. That proves it even stronger. So you can cite atheistic philosophy if the atheists also say, you know, you should brush your teeth in the morning or something that we also agree in.
Yeah.
The American Dental Association, we're all a bunch of atheists, they say it too. Yes?
Hare Krishna, I don't remember how it sounds in Bengal. Maybe Hare Krishna probably remembers. It sounds like about, I take your pestle and your mortar and break your teeth with them. And Prabhupada used that as a way of. Prabhupada said that the principle to deal with Mayavadis and atheists is
yes.
To take their arguments and turn the arguments against them and break their own teeth with them.
Yes.
I take, that's what he says. The Bengali saying goes, I take your pestle and your mortar and break your own teeth with these things. I don't.
Okay, so that's the way we utilize. As the Purvapaksha, and then just defeat it. Yes.
Like a small one comment and question. I heard a nice statement that Charvak, he
Yes.
And sense gratification is more love than.
Well. Krishna's body is
a statements.
Okay, that's a poet's trick to take something and change the meaning of it completely around. Yes. Yes.
Like as you mentioned in your class, there are certain areas which are very clear that which has to be renounced, like four sinful activities, etc. And certain areas which are very clear that we have to utilize that in devotional service. Like maybe like using a warm cloth in a heavy, you know, winter and things like that. So the black areas and the white areas to be used or not to be used.
Yes.
But certain areas are like a gray areas.
Yes.
Like you are going to buy some, you know, pen which is, you know, it's 2 rupees extra. Or, you know, certain things like, you know, sometimes confusion comes whether I should accept it or not.
Well, if it's an important question, you know, not just a question of 5 rupees on a pen. Maybe you're going to spend 5,000 rupees on something or 50,000 rupees on something. You don't know whether you should spend it or, you know, accept something that might turn out to be a distraction or a burden, and you're not sure about it. You can do a few things. If it's really important, you can go to your spiritual master and consult. Or if that's not practical, if it's not important enough or not possible, you consult with other devotees. Or even if you think it's not important enough for that, or it's not practical to do it, you can just experiment. You know, this time try spending an extra 5 rupees on a pen and see what the result is. Yeah. Yeah. You can make an experiment. You can try it out, but be careful. Yeah. Don't get addicted to fancy pens. We're supposed to stop. This is the last question.
Yeah. Actually, I wonder sometimes Krishna is entering in palaces, so or he's going from palaces to his courtroom or working place. So while going to palaces, he expands himself 16,100 times.
Yes.
So while going from court to palaces, there are some servants also following him. So, what happens to them? So like,
I don't know. There's some arrangement because it is described that Krishna merges into one Krishna after coming out of all his palaces. So, I guess and some arrangement. He tells the servants to do something else, sends them away. He does it every morning. He manages to discreetly merge himself into one Krishna. He has his Yogamaya potency. He can cover everybody's eyes if necessary. Okay. All right, we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.